2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
To take KSL Outdoors, this is Utah's most listened to program about hunting, fishing, camping, and high adventure. All the gear you need to buy, where the fish are biting, and secret places in Utah and around the world where you can have a blast. KSL Outdoors with host Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Thanks again for the news update on the half hour. We'll go back to ABC at the top and then have the second hour of KSL Outdoors Radio coming up for you. Tim Hughes, along with Navi, still hanging in there with us for this second hour. And happy to start this hour, Navi, with being able to talk about this Razorback Sucker project that's been going on for quite a while. The endangered species list, of course, we chat about from time to time, but this Razorback Sucker's been on there for quite a while, I think.
Oh, yeah. 88, I think. It's a big animal, Tim. I don't know if you know that, but they're like 3 feet long, pretty much.
I had no idea.
Yeah, they're big animals. I don't know a lot about them, but I know they need the flooded river to spawn. And they're one of the rare animals, as far as I remember, that can actually eat plants, like a herbivore. They'll eat some plant life to keep themselves. And most fish are carnivores. They only eat meat. But
holy
maybe,
cow.
You know, Mike Partlow can tell us more.
Yeah, I was about to say, let's see if we can find out a little bit more, but it's why I wanted you to be a part of this conversation. Mike Partlow is the native aquatic biologist for the Division of Wildlife Resources. Did we get the dates right that this effort has been going on, Mike, since, what, 1988?
That's right. They were listed on the federal endangered species list right around then, 1988. They've been a protected species in Utah since sometime in the 70s, but I'm not certain on what that date was either, but really recovery activities have been going on in IRTA since the early 90s.
And it's not just Utah. There are several states involved.
That's right. Several states and federal agencies. So just how there's a lot of different users for the water and the river and the Upper Colorado River and the Green River, there's multiple agencies like the Fish and Wildlife Service, the Bureau of Reclamation, Colorado, Wyoming, Utah are all part of this combined recovery program.
Am I right? Oh, go ahead, Mike.
Well, I was going to say one thing we have, Tim, in this country of ours is a lot of ancient history within the rivers. And these are big animals that live near the bottom on large river systems. I'm talking sturgeon kind of things, paddlefish kinds of things, and, of course, this Razorback Sucker fits in that category. It's a monster fish that lives on the bottom of these rivers. And to know that there's still some fish like this left over from ancient times, in my mind, is very rewarding.
Well, and it's one of the reasons why, and I guess one of the first questions everybody wants to ask when they see the word sucker, why are we putting all these efforts into saving a sucker? You can't eat those guys. What's your answer to that one?
Well, I think that there's multiple reasons why or arguments that I could make on why it's important. There's really nobody's – I mean, they're endangered, so you're not allowed to eat them. But they were eaten historically
yes.
and prehistorically in the area. Personally, the way that I feel is just once you've held one of these Razorback Suckers – and they're one of the largest suckers in North America. Like you said, they can get 3 feet long. But they've just got one of the most unique bodies with this bony ridge on their back. And I've just never seen another fish like them. And I think that that in itself gives them some value that we need to save them. But also, like a lot of species, the razorback sucker really is just kind of an indicator of the overall health of the river system. And I could really spend a long time talking about that, but yeah, they really, if the fish that evolved in this river can't survive, then that really tells us that, you know, there's some stuff going on with that system we need to look closer at.
Exactly how I feel. These guys, Tim, were eaten. And by the way, all the suckers, I mean, that term sucker, it gives this animal a bad name. Yeah, you know, does a sturgeon look beautiful to some? Like, only a mother could love that fish. I'll tell you, they are gorgeous. And if you hold a big sturgeon or like a large fish like he just described, you get emotional. This is a beautiful animal. And by the way, the Tippecanoe branch of the Ghost Chute Indians, they made their livelihood on the June sucker right here in our little drainage systems, the Weber, the Provo, and such. So they're good eating. There's a lot of good protein that have actually been foraged for Native peoples for a long time.
If I hooked into one of these things, I would probably think that I had caught some prehistoric beast that nobody even knew existed anymore. But they're only found, Mike Partlow, correct me if I'm wrong, only found now in the Colorado River and some of its tributaries. Is that true?
So most of them, they're in the Colorado and Green River and tributaries above Lake Powell. And there are some populations below Lake Powell in the lower Grand Canyon and Lake Mead and down in Lake Havasu. But historically, their range would have been, you know, all the way down to California and up into Arizona and in the Gila and Salt River Basin. And really, the one of the biggest populations now is this Green River and Upper Colorado River population that I work with.
One of the go ahead.
I want to ask you about the implications of Lake Powell. I mean, you said that they're in the Salt and the Gila drainage systems, and I'm very familiar with those areas. But I want to know the impact Lake Powell has had on this fish. Does it improve its spawning capability? Does he have any part of his life ever in the lake, or does he only stay up above in the rivers?
Well, that's a really good question. For many years, I think Lake Powell was really looked at as a place where, you know, native fish went to die. But in the last 6 years or so, there have been some studies done in Lake Powell that show that we're probably a little bit wrong about that. And razorback suckers do seem to use some of that habitat in Lake Powell. Having said that, there's just so many big predatory fish down there that it's a pretty tough life for them. As far as reproduction, we're not certain. There certainly isn't much happening down there, if it is happening. But we do detect these fish going into the lake and using the lake. A crazy thing we've even documented is razorback suckers that were stocked into the San Juan River moving through Lake Powell into the Green and Colorado River systems and vice versa. So that's a pretty incredible migration across Lake Powell.
That is incredible.
Yeah,
wow.
And I think it was a bit of a surprise to you guys that they were actually traveling as far as they do, and some even going down to Nevada. I guess they wanted to do a little gambling in Vegas or something and then come back. I don't know.
Right. I think the first time that we documented it, but we spent some time trying to figure out if our special tag equipment had somehow malfunctioned because it seems so improbable. But no, now we've got several instances, and these guys will move hundreds of miles in a year to just move to different habitats and to spawn, which actually one of the biggest spawning places happens right over here by Dinosaur National Monument.
So what's being done then to build this species back up? Are we growing them in hatcheries and then moving them to certain places strategically? Give us some of the details.
So we've been growing them, Utah Division of Wildlife, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and Colorado Division of Wildlife has hatcheries that have been cranking these fish out for years now, and we've gotten pretty good at getting those hatchery-reared fish to survive in the river, to the point where we now actually have a pretty good population of adult fish in the Green and the Upper Colorado Rivers. And really, the next step that we're really working on hard now is getting those fish to, for their young to survive in the river. They reproduce, but we're having a really hard time getting those young fish that are spawned each year to survive into adulthood.
Mm. Is it because there's predation? These fish are consumed by other fish, or is there some kind of a chemical reason? Do you have any ideas, the theories, to why they're not making it? They live like 40 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. And that 40-year lifestyle in or lifespan in itself kind of suggests that that in a natural system, they may not have reproduced every year. That's one reason why you might have a long life. But really, that reason, there's two reasons, I think, for why their young have such trouble surviving. One, like you said, is non-native fish. These fish didn't evolve in a system that had lots of predators. There really would have been only been one natural predator for them, and that's the Colorado pike minnow. So now that we have multiple species, you know, smallmouth bass, green sunfish, they just eat the young pretty relentlessly. And then the second reason is that part of the razorback sucker's lifestyle is that they spawn when the spring floods are starting to happen in the spring. And then they're young, which we call larval fish, and they're just kind of a thread that's at the whim of the current. Those fish need to be washed into floodplains along the side of the river, and that's their nursery habitat.
Well,
so now that we have these big dams like Flaming Gorge, those kind of stopped those floods from happening.
Yeah,
so is that why? Then that was the strategy, was to let a lot of water out, simulating the spring runoff. Did that have benefits to the fish?
It has had benefits. So we've been working on the ideas of sort of a more natural flood in the spring than what we used to get from Flaming Gorge Dam, and now. For a while, we didn't quite have the timing right, and we would match that with the flows from tributary, the Yampa River. And we figured out starting around 2012 that we needed to actually match that with when we found these larval razorback suckers in the river. And that's worked pretty good. Since 2012, we've actually raised a little over 4,000 of these wild-produced razorback suckers up to a size of about 2.5 inches and release them back into the river. And a few of those we've detected surviving to about 3 years old, which is pretty close to that adult size, which is it's a lot of work for a few fish, but it's a huge milestone in recovering a species.
Yeah, wow, it's an amazing story. And by the way, from going on the brink of extinction to an estimate last year or 2 years ago, that there might be as many as 35,000 adult razorback suckers in the Green River. Just an amazing effort going on. We need to wrap it up here, but thanks for sharing all that information. It's really mind-opening for me. And obviously, if they're on the endangered species list, if somebody happens to hook into one, you got to let them go, and there won't be any doubt in anybody's mind they've caught one, right?
Right, not for the razorback sucker. If you catch a fish with a big bony hump on its back, a sharp ridge, that's a razorback sucker. No way to mistake it.
Yeah. That's what the ladies say about Navi, if they catch him somewhere on the street.
It's a phony ridge that really gives me away.
Hey, Mike, we appreciate your time today. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, we will break. We've got news of the week coming up here in just a minute, so don't go away.